This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, I'm Fiona Pepper and this is Fictions. On Untrue Crime today, we bring you Tippi, a story of a young girl who takes matters into her own hands on behalf of the family she loves. Writer Mark Brandy has spent most of his professional life working for the criminal justice system before publishing his first award-winning novel, Wimmera. His second novel, Rip, was published last year to critical acclaim. For Untrue Crime, Brandy explores the sense of powerlessness of a young child and the way it's transformed when met with cruel brutality. Here's Tippi by Mark Brandy. And just a warning, this is not a story for young ears.
Tippi was a super dog, best one we ever had. A Kelpie, black as ink, with a white patch on his chest. Nothing and no one could stop him. Best dog in town, easy. So smart, just ridiculous. One of those dogs who can be in charge of things. Always with a glint in his eye. Mad as a snake butt. Top cricketer too. Great fielder, fast as lightning. Jump the fence easy as you like. Just a ripper dog, Tippi. A champion. Full on. Only thing was, sometimes he liked to run away. We reckoned he was going out rooting because it mostly happened in spring and he'd usually be gone for a couple of days. Sometimes he'd come back with long welts across his back, like some bitch's owner had given him a whipping. That's what Mick said. After the fourth or fifth time, Mick reckoned we couldn't have him loose in the backyard anymore. So he chained him to the water bowl with a padlock and everything. His water bowl wasn't a little one or anything. It was this enormous cast iron pot we scaved out from the tip. Really bloody heavy. We found him about a mile away, dragging the cast iron pot along the road like a complete mental case. He must have been desperate for a route to drag it all that way. It still had some water in it, so he could have a drink when he got tired of rooting. That's what Mick said. Mick's my older brother, and he has an opinion on most things, even if he's wrong sometimes. Mick's real name is Michael, but everyone calls him Mick, even Mum. He really cracks it if you call him Michael. Only Nan called him Michael. She was the only one who could get away with it. When the water bowl didn't work, Mick took to chaining him to the fence out back. Tippi didn't like it much. He barked a lot. Then he'd go quiet for a bit. Then he'd start up barking again. I realised later that the quiet time must have been when he was thinking about what he was going to do, planning it all out like a pro. So when Mick took him off the chain to put him in the car this one time, Tippi took off like a shot. It was like he thought, you can stuff this for a joke, I'm not going back on that chain again. And he bolted down the other side of the house and out into the street like a rocket. Mick yelled and we all ran out after him. Even Mum and Jimmy ran out into the street. Jimmy's my younger brother. He's retarded, but you wouldn't know it by looking at him. We all tried to chase Tippi, but there was no catching him. He was just way too fast and way too smart for us. Someone caught him in the end, but it was about a week later when Mick found him. I remember because Mum was at work and Mick came home with these big eyes that didn't blink for ages. And then he said, Tippi's dead. Just like that. I held in my tears, swallowed them down, I tried to be tough because otherwise Mick would say I was being a sook. I asked what happened. He shrugged and said he'd found him near the back of the road to the tip. "He's still there," he said. So I asked Mick to take me, but he reckoned he was too busy working on his car. Then I begged him. So he said okay, but made me promise to make his bed for the rest of the year. That turned out to be a good deal, but because he went to jail not long after. In some ways, when I think about it now, I wish I hadn't gone to see Tippy. Because some things can't be unseen. But more than that, some things can't be undone. That's what Mick says. And even though he's wrong about some things, he's probably right about that. It was Saturday when we went. Mick saw him on the Monday, so he reckoned he might not be there anyway. He sort of shrugged when I reminded him on Friday. But on Saturday, he was up early. He said he wanted to do it quick, because he had to pick up his car before lunchtime. He loves that car, a green Valiant Pacer, shiny as anything, really flash. In the morning, Mum cooked pancakes for me and Jimmy. Mick had Vegemite on toast. I could tell Mum was still sad about Tippy, but she didn't say much. Mum never talks about how she feels, not even back before when things were better. Mum didn't eat breakfast. She just drank coffee and watched us eat. Then she said she had to go to the cemetery to visit Nan, because it was Nan's birthday. Me and Mick looked at each other, but didn't say anything. Nan died last year. I really liked Nan. She was skinny as a stick and she lived at the nursing home. Nan used to give me advice and told me to stick up for myself. "Don't let anyone push you around," she said. Sometimes she said it a few times, like she'd forgotten she'd already said it. Me and Mick and Jimmy used to go see Nan every couple of weeks, usually on a Sunday. Mum hardly ever came, but only for Nan's birthday and things like that. And then I could tell she wasn't happy. Mick reckons Mum and Nan never got on, but I was too young to remember any of that. Auntie Pam came to see Nan more often than Mum did, even though she lives in another town. Auntie Pam is Mum's sister, just so you know. If we were at the nursing home at the same time, Auntie Pam would always ask me if Mum was working. Then she'd ask if she was drinking. I always said I wasn't sure, even if I knew the answer to both questions. The tip is a fair way outside of town. There's a couple of good ways to get there, but the quickest on the bike is the fire access road, which is out near the rifle range. I'm always a bit scared going past the rifle range. Mick told me once that some kid got hit by a stray bullet that went straight through his heart. "Dead before he hit the ground," he said. That story was almost definitely bullshit, but it still made me nervous. Mick rode about 20 metres ahead of me and was going pretty quick. He doesn't like it if I ride too close. It's the same if we walk somewhere, I always have to stay a bit behind. I don't mind, but he's got a much faster bike anyway, a cruiser. He bought it from one of his mates. Mine's just a BMX and it's a few years old and way too small for me. Mick put the seat post up as far as it can go, but it's still too small. We got to the start of the fire access road. I really hoped we were going the other way, but Mick turned onto the dirt track and that was that. The road wound through the bush, all loose gravel and dust, and I gritted my teeth and listened out for the crack of a gunshot. I thought for sure I was going to get hit. Or maybe even Mick would get hit, and then it would be all my fault for making him take me, and Mum would probably never forgive me, even if Mick gives her the shit sometimes. I could almost see her face if I had to tell her Mick was dead. It'd be pretty awful. I slowed down a bit because I thought it was better if we rode further apart so it would be harder to target. But then I remembered it was a stray bullet anyway, so it wouldn't make a difference. Mick stopped his bike and waited for me to catch up. The sun was getting hot and I was starting to sweat. Mick took off his t-shirt and stuffed it down the inside of his jeans. His back was long and arched and deep brown from the heat of summer, and I wished my skin could be like that. I could see the bones of his spine, almost like he was a lizard. He nodded towards the side of the track. "There," he said. I couldn't see anything.
"Where?"
"There," he said, and pointed this time. The scrub was pretty thick, all prickly bushes and old gum trees that were twisted and dry. Most of them were too close together, so the trunks were skinny and kind of sick looking. Then I saw it. It was an old fence, one of those really old ones with grey posts that are almost falling over, and barbed wire that's all rusty and loose. There was a house behind it, maybe 30 metres into the scrub, an old weatherboard. In between two of the old fence posts on top of the barbed wire was a black mat, almost like one of them cow rugs Mum has in her bedroom. It was like the calf one, the little one, but smaller and black instead of brown and white. There were patches of white too, but it was just his skin. There was no meat or nothing. Someone had killed him and skun him. He didn't have his head though, and it looked like his tail was gone too. "That's him, isn't it?" I said. But I wasn't really asking. Mick hocked something in his throat and spat it out on the road. I wondered why someone had skun him like that, but I couldn't really talk. I looked at the skin, then passed it to the old house. My eyes started to burn and I swallowed hard and tried to stop them marching deep inside my chest, which always comes before I cry. I didn't want to be a sook, but... and I swallowed it down. "Whose house is it?" I said. Mick shrugged. "Some old farmer." We stood there for a bit, straddling our bikes, not saying anything. I could hear the heat as much as I could feel it. The hum of blowflies, the crackling of bark, that slow, lazy call the magpies make when it gets hot, like they're bored with the world and everything in it. Mick turned his bike around. "Come on," he said. "Let's go home." Mick didn't ride so quick on the way back. He let me ride a bit closer. Not next to him, but just a few metres behind. About halfway home, when we got past the rifle range, he stopped and turned back to me. He looked me in the eyes, which he almost never does. "You all right?" he said. "Yep," I said. I think it's the only time he's ever asked me anything like that, so I remember it really clear. And then he said I could come to the garage with him to get the pacer, as long as I kept quiet. Next day I got up pretty early. I mucked around in the backyard for a bit, digging a hole till Mum told me off. I didn't tell her about the skin, because I was worried she'd get upset. She goes quiet when she gets upset, and then she won't go to work for a while. She's usually on the line at the hole-proof factory, boxing socks and undies, but not all the time. She used to get shifts at the railway hotel too, but she hasn't been there for ages. It was getting close to lunchtime, so I waited around for her to make me a sandwich. It was just Vegemite and margarine, but it was all right. Then, like he said he was going to do, Mick took the pacer out on a long drive. He said he wanted to make sure it was all fixed up and running smooth, because he doesn't trust the mechanic. Even better, he took Jimmy with him, because Mum made him. I waited for a while after they were gone, just in case they came back early, like if Mick forgot something or if there was some problem with the pacer. I waited for maybe half an hour, but it felt like longer. I tried hard not to watch the clock because it just makes time go slower. Once I'd waited long enough, I got my backpack and went to his room. Mick has two guns. One's a slug gun and the other a proper rifle, a .22. But I'm not sure where he keeps that, and I've only ever seen it once. But I've shot the slug gun heaps of times, mostly just in the backyard, but... I got the slug gun out of his cupboard and lay it carefully on the bed. I knew he kept the slugs in his bedside drawer. I decided to take the whole box and I pushed it inside my front pocket. His Swiss Army knife was in the drawer too, so I grabbed that as well, just in case I needed it for something. I put the gun inside the bag first, then the knife. The gun barrel poked out a bit, but wasn't too bad. Then I waited a bit longer. I waited till the sun went behind some clouds. I figured if it was a bit darker, it might be harder for anyone to see me. I told Mum I was going to the netball courts. That way, it made more sense if I had my backpack with me. They let me play this year in the under-13s because they couldn't get the numbers. So Mum didn't suspect a thing, I don't think. Still, my heart was pounding like mad when I rode off. I was worried about Mum finding out, but I was even more worried Mick might come home and see his gun was missing. I knew he'd kill me if I took it without asking. No one is allowed to touch his things without his permission, and no one is allowed in his room, not even Mum. These are probably his two main rules. It was hard on the bike, with the bag across my back and the handles rubbing against my shoulders. It wasn't that heavy, but really awkward. Part of the gun kept poking me in the ribs no matter which way I shifted. I was still a bit worried about the rifle range, but I thought because it was a Sunday it probably wouldn't be open. It took me ages, but eventually I found the spot. I leaned my bike against a tree, walked slowly through the scrub, trying to keep as quiet as I could. Still, the leaves and branches crackled under my feet as loud as anything. Something moved in the bushes and I jumped. I hoped it was just a bird and not a snake or anything. There's heaps of snakes around in the bush, mostly browns or red-bellied black snakes. Mick says brown snakes are more poisonous, but the black snakes definitely look scarier. Tippy was still there, hanging on the fence. Mick reckoned they must have put him there as some kind of warning, like he was there to scare off other dogs from going near the place. The old weatherboard near the tip where you get skinned by the old farmer. I put my bag on the ground, unzipped it, and got the gun out. I leaned it carefully against the fence. You always have to be careful with guns, even unloaded ones. Tippy smelled a bit, like lamb chops that had gone off, but not really bad. I touched his fur gently, patting him down his chest where his white patch was. I knew he always liked that. I squeezed my eyes tight. I could feel them marching in my chest, but I kept it inside. His fur felt different, stiffer and drier. I tried to slowly lift him off the fence, but he wouldn't come. He was caught on the barbed wire, like the farmer must have thrown him on rough. The wire pinged a bit as I pulled, and I was worried someone in the house might hear, but I eventually managed to unhook him. There was still a bit of skin or something on the fence, but I decided to leave it. I put him carefully inside the bag. Then I picked up the gun. I got the box of slugs out of my pocket, broke the gun open, and loaded it. I put the stock against my shoulder and rested the barrel over one of the fence posts. I got myself ready. I couldn't see if anyone was inside or not, but I reckon the farmer probably wouldn't be, because farmers were always out on their farms with their crops or their sheep or whatever. I couldn't see the ute anywhere. I figured his wife might be there, but... or his kids. I aimed the sights for the front window. I wasn't sure if it would break from that far away, but it was worth a try. Either way, it would definitely give them a scare, even just the noise of it. I waited for the breeze to lighten and my breath to steady. I was always a pretty good shot. I practiced heaps on birds in the backyard, the blackbirds mostly, but I got a few sparrows too. I aimed as best as I could, the sights perfectly in line with the middle of the window. I rested my finger on the trigger. I knew to squeeze slowly, not to pull it too hard or you'd end up missing altogether. Mick taught me that. He always said you had to take your time. Then I saw him. He was down the side of the house in the long grass. He was big and grey, with a long woolen coat. I couldn't tell if he'd seen me. I knew he'd probably smell me, but Mick reckons their sense of smell is 1,000 times better than ours. I don't know if that's true or not, but probably is. Then I saw the farmer. He came from behind the house and was walking beside the dog. He was tall and skinny, and I didn't like the look of him. He had white hair and a blue shirt and was carrying a shovel. I never planned to hurt anyone. That's the truth. It was just a slug gun, and I didn't think it'd do much harm. Not from that far away. I just wanted to give him a scare, that's all. Which Mick reckons I shouldn't have. He said I was a dickhead, and I should have kept my mouth shut. But I wanted to tell the truth. I just wanted to teach them a bit of a lesson, so maybe they wouldn't do that to anyone else. Mick said some things can't be undone, and he's probably right about that. But Nan always said not to let anyone push me around. She said that more than once. So I reckon she'd be happy with what I did, even if I got caught. Because the thing is, I didn't do it for me. I did it for Tippy. I did it for Nan too, and for Mick, and Mum. Even Jimmy. I did it for us. Because no one pushes us around.
That was Tippy, by Mark Brandy, starring Heidi May. The Untrue Crime series is curated by Mark Dappin, edited by Sophie Townsend, with music by James Brown. This episode was sound designed and mixed by Simon Branthwaite. Next episode, we'll bring you Slammin' with a Poet King by Julie Coe, a wild ride through slam poetry and hipster beer from the streets of the Sydney suburb of Marrickville all the way to London's Piccadilly. And if you're enjoying Untrue Crime, don't forget to tell your mates or leave us a review on iTunes. I'm Fiona Pepper. I'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.